Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas. Today, I sit down with Natalie West. We talk about the biblical basis for fostering, her journey of caring for five children over several years, and some of the hardest parts of parenting. Let's dive in. So today I am joined by my good friend, Natalie West, and it's so fun to have you here today, Natalie.
Thanks
for being here. I know. So Natalie and I actually met in LaGrange a couple years ago, and it's been so fun because not only did we get to know each other in a season where we were both newcomers to LaGrange, but I think we're very different, but we have some similar passions. And so Natalie has been somebody who has tremendously impacted me in my journey as I've been starting Woven Ministry. And you've really been like a confidant, but also a source of so much wisdom and direction and insight. So,
thanks.
Yeah. So
I just remember feeling like you and Tim were like from my tribe almost immediately because we had...
I love that.
All spent time overseas and had kind of some cross-cultural experiences before we came into this cross-cultural experience.
Seriously.
Of like settling into a new place.
Yeah.
Y'all got here a little before I did. I think like 6 months or a year maybe.
Yeah. But
it was good. I feel like we connected quickly over some... You're right. I think we're pretty different, but we have some similar life experiences even.
You know, it's funny because we both have spent... many years of our lives living overseas in different continents, but in developing countries. And so it's been fun to have some common, you know, vocabulary of, oh yeah, did you ever experience, we were talking about this yesterday, milk in a bag.
Yes.
That a lot of countries around the world actually have milk in a bag. And some countries have milk in a box where you don't even put it in the fridge. So.
Well, even the plastic pitcher that you described that the milk in a bag fits down into, like I can picture it.
Yes.
I feel like they probably all come from China and go to every part of the developing world. And you have to cut the corners. And if you only cut one corner, then it like glops out. But you have to cut both corners so that
it creates the airflow and everything.
See, like life skills that
yes,
we learned.
Exactly. But then on
really
the flip side of that, this morning I was talking about how I just recently found out about how you don't have to, turns out, scrub drip pans on a stove for an entire Saturday. And, you know, use all your baking soda to do the home remedies, you can actually just go buy a new set of four at Walmart for $7.99.
Yes.
And you pointed out maybe that's because you were living overseas for 7 years in your young adult life and you missed out on all kinds of
things. And you left, like, the program that I went with to serve overseas, you have to be under 30. And I like squeaked in.
Okay.
Like I literally left when I was 29.
Yeah.
And had my 30th birthday while I was there, like in my first year on the field. You like walked across the stage to graduate from college and onto an airplane.
Like, pretty much.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I had a little bit of adulthood behind me. Mm-hmm. Like I had had real big girl jobs and had lived independently and all of those things. And then I went.
Yeah.
And tried to adjust to a different culture. I feel like you were like a babe.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So I was.
Yeah.
I was,
your early adulthood was, you went from college to somewhere else.
Yeah. That makes me feel a little bit like, okay, I'm not as out of touch as
you. Yeah. No.
That's, thanks for that.
That's big.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Tell our listeners a little bit about what your day-to-day life looks like and just kind of who you are and what,
yeah, really
what you do.
Unusual over the last year. Hashtag COVID. I've been in different forms, I think, of Christian ministry through my whole career. I've served on staff at like a really big church and did the overseas thing for a while and worked here at kind of like in the home office of a sending agency to help other people get prepared to go serve cross-culturally. And I worked in Christian camping and I helped start a nonprofit. I've done kind of a wide range of Christian right. ministry things over the course of my career, but then was laid off because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And so, honestly, like, I'm a stay-at-home mom to a preschooler, trying to figure out what comes next. And I had a friend who had been kind of doing commercials for this master's degree program in Christian studies. And when I suddenly found myself, honestly, with a whole lot of time on my hands and a child that wasn't quite ready to jump back into full-time daycare, even if I had been able to find a full-time job, it just seemed right. So I'm a stay-at-home mom of a preschooler, and also I'm a full-time student working on a degree in Christian studies right now. So that's awesome. What now looks like.
Yeah.
Who knows awesome. What will happen
yeah.
in just a few months when I graduate.
Yeah. So. Okay. So you said you're a mom of a preschooler, but yeah. I'd like to talk more about this because okay. when I first met you at my husband was working with you at a camp yeah. and that's where we kind of first got connected. And I remember, you just started to share a little bit more about your life and how you had fostered, mm-hmm. Through different seasons and had fostered several different children. And then our family got the privilege of seeing you foster another child here in our community and that child becoming a part of our community and what a sweet just gift that was. And to be honest, I hadn't really walked very closely with anyone in that process before. And so having some of those conversations with you was really eye-opening. And that's a lot of what I want to talk about today is just about fostering. I'd love to know more first about your journey of fostering and how you got into that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, when I was overseas, I had some friends who adopted while we were living in Africa. And so I was close to a family and was friends with someone who walked through the process and kind of had a front row seat. And that little girl, like, I would be introduced as that little girl's second mom mm-hmm. sometimes. Cause we just bonded pretty mm-hmm. quickly and, I was the only babysitter available.
Yeah.
So when they would need to do stuff with their big kids, I would sometimes, have the little one who was, you know, a pretty yeah. decent age span between yeah. their biological kids and then this new, little Ugandan girl.
Mm.
And so getting to see that, and then we would also spend time in some orphanages while we were there and volunteer and the country that I was in first is Uganda. And at the time, it had the highest AIDS infection rate in the wow. world. Yeah, the AIDS crisis in Uganda had created a pretty significant orphan crisis in Uganda. And so we volunteered and worked with some orphanages while we were there and would even, like, take missionary kids after school to the orphanage to go play and hang out, and that's where my friends met their daughter, and mm-hmm. So it kind of gave me a front row seat to what it can be like mm-hmm. to care for a child that you don't give birth to,
right?
So that was kind of the first entry into even thinking in those terms. But then after I got home, I had kind of a season with the Lord where I was in, like, vocational ministry, but I felt like there was more that I wanted to be doing. There was more that I ought to be doing. But really big things, like, paralyzed me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, am I supposed to start this big nonprofit, or what am I supposed to do? And at the time, Katie Davis's first book, I think the title is Kisses from Katie.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, really young girl.
Right.
Even younger than you were when you went overseas. Right. She was this really young American girl, went to Uganda and started volunteering in an orphanage. And that, like, snowballed mm-hmm. into this massive ministry that mm-hmm. she has. And she had, at the time, adopted a whole lot of children. And,
yeah.
Anyway, I read her book, but was kind of paralyzed by the whole, like, am I supposed to be Katie Davis? Am I supposed to, like, what's this big thing I'm supposed to do?
Yeah.
But really, in her book, some of the things that she talks about is just caring for the person that's right in front of you. Like, even kiddos that she didn't adopt or that just needed, like, a short time in her home to get some medical care or those kinds of things. She talks about rocking a baby who hadn't been rocked that day. Making eye contact with children who maybe hadn't been spoken to that day. And it just, I feel like the Lord used what was going on in my professional life, what I felt like he had been calling me to more of something.
Yeah.
And kind of right at the same time, I was headed out on a vacation to go see the friends who had adopted while we were in Africa.
Wow.
And like ran through a bookstore and just grabbed a book to read on the airplane and on the beach and didn't really give it a lot of thought. And it was that book.
Wow.
And so it all kind of dovetailed really beautifully. And had a friend who had walked through it, who sitting next to me on a beach one day was like, you just ought to do it. Just, like, it makes sense. Don't, you know, you don't need to be married to do it. You don't need to have had this big rebel, like no lightning bolt or burning bush needs to show up for you to know what to do to be obedient. So just do it.
Yeah.
So I left that vacation committed to praying through it for 6 weeks. And because I tend to want to bounce things off of people to get immediate feedback. What I really felt like the Lord was requiring of me and asking me to do was to pray about it alone for 3 weeks, for half of that time. So, you know, of course, my friend Whitney in North Carolina knew that I was praying about it, but
great name.
She spells it different.
I like a good Whitney.
So I got home, and for 21 days after that vacation, I just laid it before the Lord continually. And at, you know, begged him, like, don't let me do something that I'm not, like, I don't want to run ahead. Yeah. And I certainly don't want to fall behind. Like, I felt like for a long time I had fell behind on, like, just this more thing just kept coming up. So I prayed alone for 21 days, and then I started telling people close to me, and asking them to pray with me. And so it was really interesting what the Lord did, because some of those conversations were immediately affirming. Like, I was a little bit nervous about talking to my parents just because I thought that they were going to want to talk about like financial things and practical things that I didn't necessarily have answers for at the time. And instead, we were eating dinner. My dad, it's like so vivid in my head. My dad had a fork full of salad. And I got to the end of this long, you know, spiel I had prepared. And I was like, so I think I am supposed to pursue being a licensed foster parent. And my dad didn't really even slow down. Like, he just looked up from his salad and was like, well, of course you are. We're kind of surprised you haven't done it yet. Took a big bite of salad and we moved on.
You're like,
but wow. Another, like a really dear friend's immediate response was not immediately affirming. Like, she cried when I told her that that's what I was thinking of. And she was like,
wow,
are you sure? Cause I don't think it's going to be horrible when they leave. And I don't want that. Like, what she kept saying was, I don't want that for you.
Wow.
And I had to like end that conversation and go back to the Lord, back to our just me and him. Am I really hearing you right? And it actually was helpful in the process. Right, to have someone respond that way as well, because I got to go back to that friend and say, nope, I so appreciate that you're protective of me and that you gave me an opportunity to think of all the downside.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is actually what the Lord's saying. And so when I was able to do that, like, it was helpful, right, to have some godly friends in your life.
Yeah.
When I was able to go back and say, okay, I heard what you said. I went back and prayed some more.
Yeah.
I'm coming back to you to say, yeah, no, this is really what the Lord's saying.
Right.
Then she was immediately affirming. Okay.
Wow.
If this is what he's calling you to, then you have people behind you.
Yeah.
If this is what he's going to do with you, then this is what we're going to do.
Yeah. Then I'm on board.
So it was really a good, I think, I can't say this about all the seasons of my life or all the things that the Lord has called me to. But I think it was a good, healthy process that I worked through with. I feel like you're asking me to do more, Lord. Do I need to be Katie Davis? Do I need to, do I have to move back overseas to fulfill this thing that you're asking me to do? Do I, and it just kept coming back to me, this image of like, well, I can rock a baby.
Yeah.
Like I don't.
Yeah.
There's a whole long list of things. I don't have a husband. Mm-hmm. I don't have a co-parent with me. I don't, you know, I didn't necessarily have financial stability. But the Lord had provided a 2-bedroom townhouse. And I just, you know, that whole 21 days, well, really that whole 6 weeks while I was praying, I kept telling him, I think I'd rather have a baby than a roommate. Like it, that just sounds more appealing to me.
Wow.
But like missionaries and training had stayed in that room and an adoptive, a biological mom who in like finished out her pregnancy had in that room. And we had used that room for the kingdom. But I just like, he had, I didn't know about financial stability, but I had room.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about what it was going to be like to parent on my own, but I had a crib.
Yeah.
Like somebody gave me a crib.
Yeah.
And,
so God's just providing all
the needs. Just kept lining up. And I kept thinking, well, if what a kid needs is for someone on any given day, right, to make eye contact with them, to rock them, to make sure that they're safe and loved, that I can do that.
Yeah.
Right. Especially if you only think in terms of one day at a time, like, oh, well, I can do that.
Yeah.
And really in the early stages, right, it's like, oh, well, you have to be CPR and first aid certified. Oh, I can do that.
I can do that.
I can take that class.
That's manageable.
You have to, have to do pre-service training with CPS. Oh, well, I can take that class.
Yeah.
Because at any time you can be like, oh, well, I realize this isn't for me, so I'm out. But like the very next thing in front of me, well, I can do that.
Yeah. So I have so many questions and so many thoughts and so many places I want to go. But one of the things I want to talk about is first of all, before I get into some of just even the emotional pieces, is why is this important? Why does this matter? And I think maybe we have some thoughts that maybe pop to our, you know, our head, but I want to hear more of you from you who has studied the Bible extensively about this. And so share a little
bit. Yeah. I mean, let's do that first. I think scripturally, first of all throughout the Old Testament, one of the ways that God reveals himself to his people is that he's a God of justice, that he has concern for the oppressed, for the outsider. He does justice. That's one of the phrases. He does justice for the fatherless. He is a defender of the fatherless. Like he tells his people that over and over and over again. The book of Ruth is full of examples of how even the way they were instructed to like glean their fields, they weren't supposed to harvest from every single corner and every nook and cranny. They intentionally left things behind for the poor people in their communities to come by and pick up food. There was a lot put in place for the children of Israel to take care of the people who couldn't take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Or to defend people who couldn't defend themselves. And so their mandate was to be a light to the nations. What the children of Israel were supposed to do was live in such a way that communicated to the people that lived around them who Yahweh is. They failed pretty miserably on a lot of fronts. But if one of the ways that God revealed himself to his people and one of the things that he told them to do over and over and over again is to defend the fatherless, to stand up for the people who don't have a voice in your culture and in your community. And that in turn was supposed to communicate who he was to people who didn't know him.
Wow.
That is so powerful. Like literally we can say with a lot of confidence, scripturally, foster care is close to the heart of God. And those things are really just so affirmed in the New Testament. I mean, Jesus said, let the little children come to me. Yeah. But in Matthew chapter 25, Jesus is talking about at the end when God's going to separate the sheep from the goats, which is an illustration, right, of how he's going to separate people by those who know him and those who do not.
Yeah.
And one of the things on the list, of ways that he's going to know that people belong to him is because we, have welcomed strangers in, right? It's right there on the list. And there's actually several things on that list. He talks about giving thirsty people water and hungry people food and naked people clothing. He talks about visiting people who are imprisoned, and then talks about welcoming in strangers. And so there's, I feel like I can make an application, a direct application of foster care to a whole lot of things on that list. But like the clearest one is being a stranger, having strangers around and welcoming them into your home and into your family and into your life. And then of course in James is the verse that talks about pure and undefiled religion. Like the definition of pure religious activity is to visit orphans and widows in their distress.
Mm-hmm.
Like to find the people in our cultures and in our communities who are distressed and to go to them, right? So there's one New Testament verse that talks about bringing them in and another verse that talks about going to them. So we actually have all the bases covered.
Yeah.
Right? Like whether you are...
Banned.
Yeah, yeah. If you're bringing people in your home or just going to them, it all...
Yeah.
Accomplishes the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really reached a point where because I understood the need overseas, right? I had experienced that need, and then started doing some reading about the need here and how overloaded the foster care system really is. And just the desperate need of children who find themselves without, for whatever reason, on any given day, without a caretaker, without a person who's really taking care. It became like I came to see it as a biblical mandate that I couldn't ignore. So I'm not ready, you know, like in youth ministry of the 1980s, it was kind of like overseas missions was kind of the end all be all of godliness or like spiritual maturity. And some famous preachers would even say things like, you can go, you can send, or you can be disobedient. Those are kind of your only options when it comes to international missions. And I don't actually feel that way about that topic anymore. I think there's some nuance to that, and that we need to remember that Jesus wasn't actually standing in Texas when he gave the Great Commission. He was standing in the Middle East. Like, we're already at the ends of the earth. That part's been like, we're there. So we don't actually have to go anywhere to fulfill the Great Commission, but we certainly shouldn't think more highly of people who have gotten a passport and gotten on an airplane in order to do ministry.
Right. Like, that doesn't make them more holy.
For sure.
Yeah.
We should not idealize an overseas calling. But I've started to kind of feel that way about caring for the oppressed or caring for those who were overlooked. Like, to me, scripture just screams it so loudly. That for me to not be involved in some way would be disobedient.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we have to be really careful about taking the things that God has made us passionate about and assuming that everyone should be passionate about them. And so that's a kind of a hard line to walk when you feel like a really important thing is like in your face all the time.
Right.
But I really do feel like the church in America could be doing a much better job of loving these kids who, again, for whatever reason and for whatever amount of time, need to be removed from whatever situation they're in and put in a place. You know, scripture talks about how God is the lifter of our heads. It's in a psalm that I believe David wrote, that God is the lifter of my head. And children who have been abused or neglected or who just have experienced a time of maybe extreme poverty or have a parent who needs to serve some jail time, they their eyes are frequently downcast, mm-hmm. right? And we've been around people who are either full of shame yeah. or who have experienced trauma, who have a hard time making eye contact.
Yeah.
And I think in the same way, right, that a man like David can say that God is the lifter of my head. Mm-hmm. You really don't have to be around a kid very long mm-hmm. to speak to them in a way, to treat them in a way that can like raise their yeah. little chins, right? Yeah. Like bring their eyes up to meet yours. Mm-hmm. Because we see the inherent value in them, not because of where they came from or right. Yeah. The circumstances in which they were conceived
right.
are
right.
usually not what any conservative Christian would call God's plan for the family. Yeah. And yet, right. Theologically, I cannot get to a place where every single human mm-hmm. is not an image bearer
yeah.
and that God didn't do a miracle to,
yeah.
to allow conception and that,
yeah.
you know, the fact that it ever really works right is a miracle. Mm-hmm. And they're image bearers and it can be beneficial to be an approved babysitter like you were for me mm-hmm. and to, take our little chunk of a boy who ended up a chunk, right? He started out with having been diagnosed with failure to thrive and ended up a little chunk. Yeah. But you know, for you to tell me on a lot of Sundays, bring him over after church, we'll love on him and play with him and rock him to sleep. And you can go grocery shopping and take the groceries home and unload them without having to juggle him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That like you helped lift his head in similar ways as I got to. And you spent, you know, an hour and a half with him on Sunday afternoons. Mm-hmm. But it was still really valuable. And and especially in the life of a child that has missed that.
For sure.
From the very earliest hours.
Yeah.
Of absolutely. Life. And even, I mean, there's lots of neuroscience behind trauma and how our bodies and our brains respond. But the most current stuff is saying that even kiddos who experience trauma in utero have some challenges with brain development.
Wow.
So it doesn't even necessarily need to be like a really terrible situation with adults in their lives who are making terrible decisions. Like mom could just have been in a car accident during pregnancy or...
Yeah.
Anyway, it's still like valuable to know how to make eye contact, instill personhood and value and...
Wow.
So, I guess that was a long answer, but at this point it would be disobedient of me... just because I feel like God has made pretty clear that he's passionate about it, about whoever it is in our communities who is prone to be overlooked or ostracized in any way and to bring those people into our lives in meaningful ways. And so this is just the way that I think that I'm trying to be obedient in this way because I feel like it's what he's put in front of me.
We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor. This episode was made possible by Eric Lehman at Thrivent Financial. Thrivent Financial is a proud sponsor of Woven. Eric believes that money is a tool, not a goal. He can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. My own family and I are Thrivent clients and have benefited from the suite of products they offer, from life insurance to financial planning and retirement. Eric has several offices in Central Texas and can be reached by calling 979-338-9998. So one of the things that we've talked about that, again, was one of those kind of hard questions that I remember thinking, oh, is this offensive? Should I be asking this? But I just really wanted to know, how do you do this when you have a child that is placed in your care and the likelihood is that they may not be in your home forever, under your care forever, and... how do you do that? I remember even, I think, asking you kind of beating, you know, just like stumbling over my words, but do you hold part of your heart back? Do you protect your heart so that you're not devastated when this child you know, if this child is removed from your home, do you love them fully like a parent, you know? And so some of the things that you said to me then, I remember just really opened up my eyes and have totally shifted my perspective as I viewed foster care and even just being able to enter into it a little bit and understand more of just kind of the heart and the thought behind it. So I'd love for you just to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. The little girl that I have right now is the fifth child that has been placed in my home over the years. I only ever have one at a time because holy cow. I can't imagine. She is the only one where adoption has ever really realistically been on the table. Mm. It looks like I will probably parent this child for the rest of her days. Like, we're going to change her last name to mine, I think. But that means that there's four other kiddos, right, that have lived in my home for a range of time. I mean, one of them as little as about 48 hours, but one of them for 11 months. It's funny that even the way you asked the question, right, kind of betrays the way we think of suffering, right? You said, do you hold part of your heart back so that it won't be devastating when they leave?
Right.
It's just devastating.
Yeah.
It is. There's a famous...
If you're doing it,
I think the way that we're being asked to do it.
Yeah.
There's a famous C.S. Lewis quote about... It's a really long quote. I couldn't get it right. But the crux of it is... to love is to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, you have to put your heart out there, really to get anything back. And C.S. Lewis words it beautifully, but he talks about the alternative then is to just lock your heart up.
Right.
In a coffin.
Oh yeah.
You just have to choose. Mm-hmm. There's really no in between.
Yeah.
What children who are in foster care need are loving adults in their lives. And so when you really spend time thinking about, I haven't born any biological children, but I've been present for a delivery, right? I've walked through pregnancies with close friends. I, of course, watch women mother all the time. Mm-hmm. And when you really think about when the state hands you this infant or this child and says the adults in his or her life have not been faithful to do the job that God asked them, ordained for them to do.
Yeah.
The adults have dropped the ball.
Yeah.
They have proven themselves not trustworthy, and this child is suffering as a result. So when you let that settle in, the deep need that has created in the life of a child, then you can't do anything but just love them wholeheartedly and
stand in that gap.
Yeah. And try to make up the difference, right? Yeah. Like, it's not like there's, I've done it in a graph before to try to like solidify how to think of it. Right. But if really in utero it starts, but from their earliest of hours, right? When you held your baby skin to skin, when you nursed them, when you made eye contact with them, when they heard your voice, when they felt your breath, like all of those things caused the start of an incline for them to learn that humans are trustworthy,
right?
Every time an infant cries because their dirty diaper is uncomfortable or because they're hungry, and any human, right? We're actually interchangeable for them in those earliest of days.
Yeah.
They don't have a preference. Any adult will do.
Yeah.
But if I cry and an adult meets the need, that forms neurological pathways in our brains that literally can't be formed in any other way. Mm. And so kiddos that are neglected, again, for whatever reason, and they cry and no one comes to feed them, or they are, you know, have a diaper rash and nobody helps take care of it, or they're just lonely and nobody holds and cuddles and coos and makes eye contact and those kinds of things. It's not just the deficit.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a flat line. in comparison to the steep incline of the biological kid who's really loved, it's a deficit. So there's like the longer that goes on, the gap just increases. So even some babies that I've gotten who've been pretty young when I've gotten them are, they're on edge. They are hard to console. Or I had one child that had stopped crying enough. Like I would discover that he had a poopy diaper and he wouldn't have let me know because he had already experienced enough life where, well, I cried cause it was uncomfortable and nobody came and changed it. So apparently that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So he really didn't cry enough when I first got him to let me know when he was hungry or when he, and that changed. Praise the Lord that he, like his little brain, we reversed some of those things. And that's the other thing that neuroscience is teaching us is that there's a lot of brain elasticity. They used to really think that by about five, our brains were hardwired and whatever personality traits or character traits or sometimes even habits had been whatever had been hardwired into our brains by the time we were about five. Well, that's just how it was going to be for the rest of our lives.
Right.
But what they're seeing now is that there's almost no end age-wise to our brain elasticity. It gets harder to change those neurological pathways as we get older, but we're able to do it. So it's like the damage, so to speak, or the deficit that these children have experienced, it's fixable. Certainly from a physical neurological standpoint, like science is showing us that, but we believe theologically it's reversible because we know that what God delights to do is to heal us and to, step into the brokenness. We just did Easter and that's what he did, right? Yeah. He pitched his tent among us. He showed up when we were in deep trouble. And so I think it's, that in part is how we can say that, that it's work that's close to the heart of God, because I think it mirrors pretty closely, what he did for us. Mm-hmm. But as far as like being devastated, it's just devastating. And we, I think in part that's how we know we're doing good work when it's over or when it doesn't go the way we expected it to, it hurts. Then you know that you were in a good spot. But if God can be trusted when I was working through the loss of one of the kiddos that I kind of thought was gonna be forever and it turned out not to be, I really got the sense that the Lord was saying to me, like there was kind of a put up or shut up kind of moment in my relationship with him, because he was like, you talk all the time and you talk in ministry to the people that you're around about how deeply God cares, how he is involved in our lives, how he doesn't waste suffering in our lives. And he's with us. And so, you know, is that true? Is that still true of this child that is no longer in your home? Like, do you really believe me that I can see her? I know where she is. I'm caring for her. Even if her life from here on out doesn't go the way that you would hope.
Yeah.
Right? There's going to be suffering in her life.
Yeah.
But either I believe that God's going to show up in it and not waste it in her life in the same way that I have to believe that he does that for me, or I need to quit talking about it, right? It's either true or it's not. And then, I mean, I think he taught me a lot, not only about grief and that, but about prayer. Like when I was praying over her as I was holding her or rocking her or putting her in the crib that was in my home, prayer when she's on the other side of Houston from me is the same.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same concept. I'm praying to the same God.
Yeah.
I was asking him for the same things. And so in the same way that he can hear us pray for our children when we can feel their breaths on our neck, right? Mm. When everything's quiet in the house and you have some of those sacred moments as a mom, when they're away from you, prayer is the same thing.
Yeah.
And I got to share that with a room full of single moms one time who were having right to send their children for visits with like a former spouse.
Wow.
Or like there's just a lot of situations, right? It's not just foster care.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of situations where we don't always have control over where our kids are or how long we get to parent them or, I mean, I think the truth, right, is that in foster care, some of those insecurities in parenthood are kind of in my face a little bit more, but right, that it's the same reality for you as a biological mom. We don't really know how long we get to parent our kids.
Yeah.
And as they get a little bit older, right, we don't really know how long they're even going to let us.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Teenagers are rough sometimes. Young adult children have rough relationships with their parents. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they grab onto the same faith that we have, and sometimes they walk away from it.
Yeah.
And sometimes they live lives with the same, like, ethics and standards that we hope or that we think we instilled in them. And sometimes they walk away from that, too. And you don't know how long you're going to get to sit with them in the dark on their beds and pray with them. We just don't know. But praying for them when they're far away from that is... It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's still bringing them before the Lord, right? Asking him to intervene in their lives, asking him to bring them to salvation.
I think about that every time I drop my kids off at school in the morning and they walk out of the car and, you know, they're just, a mile or two down the road at a great public school that we have in town. And they love their classes. They have had great experiences there. But I think about that every time they get out of my car, that the greatest thing that I can do for them, not just, I can only do this, but the greatest thing that I can do for them always is to pray for them. Yeah. And that sometimes that, like, those little moments of letting your kids go reminds you of, oh, wow, that's right. God's given me this tool called prayer that I get to come before him, lay my kids before him. And, but it is this opening of your hands. And I remember one time, you know, I remember that conversation that we had where you said some of those same words that you just shared a minute ago about, you know, when I was asking you some of these hard things about fostering. And you said, you know, do you know how long? You know, is there a guarantee of how long you're going to get to parent your kids? Yeah. And I thought, wow, like I'd never thought about it like that. I think that, you know, there is in the back of your mind as you're raising children, like, God, there is no guarantee I trust you with these children, but there's no guarantee that they won't die before I do, you know? I mean, that's one of those tragic, heavy things that you never want to think about anytime you see or know a parent who has to bury a child. But that was it. That was again, it drew this connection again of, wow, to be a parent is actually to love with the greatest amount of risk and open-handedness that.
Yeah. Cause they can't reciprocate in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. And I've said before that I feel like parenting is suddenly like you have, your heart walking around outside of your body. Yeah. And that's an incredibly vulnerable feeling, you know? And so, but I do think that that moment, it was really powerful for me to realize, wow, you're right, that I can sometimes have the illusion that I'm protecting my kids from everything. And obviously that is part of our, right? Our being a good parent is doing a good job of putting those boundaries and protecting your children in the ways that you can. But you also know that you can't protect them from everything and you don't know what sicknesses or what things that may come. So,
well, and I think having a right perspective on how long we get to parent or to what extent we get to parent helps with having a better perspective on really what I think our spiritual mandate is as parents. And we are to protect, right? Like, don't touch the hot stove
for sure.
Is important. And it's one of the, for sure, one of the things that we're supposed to do. But the thing, one of the things that the Lord has really driven home for me is that he uses suffering Scripturally, that's true. We don't like to talk about it. Like, it's not something that people preach on very much. We don't, it's not part of polite conversation in our church culture right now. But he uses suffering to draw us to him, to help us with endurance, which is another thing that he calls us to. And so if that's true in my life, right, and it's easier to think about it in my life, and think and be able to look back,
yeah,
and see, oh, well, there was some suffering in this instance or in that instance, but look at what the Lord taught yeah. me or whatever. Like, it's not helpful while you're going through it.
Yeah.
Usually you have to get to the other side, to have that perspective. But if that's true for my life and true for your life, then it's also true for my children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I cannot stand in between my little girl and suffering, right? Like, first of all, I can't prevent her from scraping her knee right now. She trips over everything
right.
and always has a skint knee. And that's like very simple and very small.
Yeah.
But there are a lot bigger things to come. The world is going to break her heart. She's going to have to work through, even if this summer we finalize an adoption, she has the same last name as me, this is a done deal, we're in it for good.
Yeah.
We're going to come to a day where she's going to need to grieve the loss of her biological family.
Yeah.
She's probably going to have a lot of questions, right? Yeah. About why that happened and how it came to be that the people who were originally intended to be protective of her and
yeah.
to provide for her in all the ways, emotionally and yeah. physically, they haven't been a part of that process for her. And so yeah. that's going to need to be grieved. It's going to cause some suffering for her.
Yeah.
And I can't,
yeah,
there's literally not anything I can do to stop that.
Right.
I can hope that I will be the kind of parent that she needs yeah. in that.
Yeah.
Right. So that
yeah.
she can get to the other side of it, look back and see all the things that the Lord did as yeah. a result. Yeah. And she can be closer to him because of it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my hope. But I can't, not only can I not stop suffering from coming into her mm-hmm. life, I don't think I'm supposed to.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. If it's one of the primary means by which
yeah.
The Lord works in our lives, then I don't want to stand between her and that.
Yeah.
I want her to get everything that mm-hmm. he has for her. I want her to experience all of it. And sometimes
yeah.
all in every life, that means some seasons of real suffering.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what that's going to look like for yeah. her, but my job, right. It gets messy with us moms, right? Because we get our identities rolled up into the role of being a mother, right? Like, I think that God has called us to be, it is part of his calling and equipping on our lives when he gives us a child to parent by whatever means. But it's not who I am.
Yeah.
And so if I were to misjudge success in parenting, by the extent to which my child suffers, right? Yeah. Then I could feel like a real failure as a parent
yeah.
when the reality is that sometimes my child is going to suffer and that's going to end up being a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember one time sharing with a group of a lot of parents, of older parents, and just saying, I was sharing my testimony and I told them that, hey, don't pray away the hard yeah. stuff yeah. for your kids as much as you might want to, because I can look back at my life and see how some of these really deep dips in the road of dark places have been the places where the Lord has used to really write a beautiful story of my yeah. life and draw me close to him. And it's shifted my whole trajectory. And I know that doesn't happen, right? For all that has been both like God leading in that and my response to trust right. in that. But as a parent, you know that our tendency is to want to pray away all sickness, all yeah. pain, all hurt, all exclusion, all
yeah.
any of that is perceived bad. And so we want to yeah. pray it away.
Yeah.
You know, and that sometimes it's even caused me to to pray differently for my children, mm-hmm. that when my son comes home and maybe he felt excluded and he's teary-eyed and his heart is just a little bit broken, that my prayers for him are, Father God, just give him compassion for yeah. other people uh-huh. as he's dealing with some of this. And of course I want, and we pray uh-huh. for God to, you know, in that moment for God to bring the right friend for right. him. And for him to be able to have somebody to play with the next day. Those yeah. are things that we still pray for, but in the pain to lean into that a little bit yeah. and to pray, oh God, would you use this to cultivate integrity in him where yeah. he sees kids who are hurting, or maybe he mm-hmm. grows up and he actually has a heart for other people who are hurting because yeah. he's been hurt, you know, yeah. and then seeing how God could, wow,
well,
how
powerful that God could use that. I don't think that they're ever too young to feel the presence of the Lord in their lives, even if later they come to realize mm-hmm. what it was.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's Psalm 23, right? Like, he shepherds us and is with mm-hmm. us and provides for us even in the valley of the shadow of death.
Yeah.
And so whether it's bullying at school or mm-hmm. or a child who has been in and out of foster care that is bouncing around to some places, right? Like, Lord, would you be really near? And
yeah.
even if they can't quite articulate what it is mm-hmm. or yeah, build compassion and allow yeah. them to see other people and those kinds of things. Yeah. But I think we sometimes think that they're too young or too little, yeah. right, for the yeah. Lord to
sure.
use things to build his their relationship yeah. with him.
Yeah.
And really, even if they can't quite articulate it yet yeah. or come to understand it much later, just asking for that's been one of the things that I've asked the Lord for the kiddos that I have loved that someone else is parenting now, yeah. whether it be a family member or a biological parent or wherever they are, that, that he would just be very present in their lives, mm-hmm. that he would bring believers.
Yeah.
Right. Like, people who will speak truth, whether it's that parent, right? Like, I've had to build yeah. a bridge and get to the place where I can pray for blessings for yeah. some of the people who have harmed children that I love. But just, like, that there would be school teachers or school librarians Absolutely. Or school nurses or, you know, Sunday school, daycare workers
yeah.
who really love the Lord, who are in their lives.
Yeah.
So that they're eventual relationship with the Lord could almost be unexplainable to the people around them.
Yeah.
But it would be because he had been working in their lives for a very long time.
Yeah.
And before they were even aware of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so good. It's been so good to have you. I feel like there's still so many things could ask. So you'll have to come back again.
Okay. For sure.
I'll lure you in. We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor.
Episode of Abnormal People, Ridiculous Questions.
I like that one. That's a good one.
It probably won't stick. We'll keep tweaking it. Full disclosure, we have a sick kid one room over with a closed door in between us, but we could get interrupted any minute.
True. So speak really quickly. And I've been
I already speak really quickly. You're
don't.
The one that talks slow.
Really? You think I speak slow?
I'm a fast talker.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Okay. Agree to disagree.
Okay. And I sound like I've been like eating pollen and my face is like exploding with just like hatred for the pollen because I'm...
Yeah, you sound like a 60-year-old smoker over there. Okay.
That's right.
You ready for this week's questions?
I think so. Go
can
for
you
it.
Can you keep from hacking a lung over there?
We'll see. I doubt it.
Okay. What do you want your epitaph to read?
Oh my gosh. That's a very loaded question. That's what this should be called. Epitaph, that's like what's on your tombstone.
Right.
Right?
Your obituary.
The first thing that popped into my head was just loved God and loved people.
All right.
Like, I mean, but that's pretty general. I feel like that's probably like some church's mission statement. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be something along those lines, you know, that I was a faithful disciple of Christ and that I loved the people around me in my life really well, you know? That's, I don't know. When you all boil it down, I guess, I feel like that's kind of what I feel like matters most anyways, right?
Hopefully, ideally.
Yeah. So, I'm going to stick to that.
Okay.
I know I usually am way more wordy than that, but.
Yes, you are.
But yeah, faithful to God and to walk with God and loved people really well, celebrated people well.
I mean, let's be honest. I'm probably not going to be the one to write it because you'll probably outlive me.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, just statistically.
That's terrible.
Females live longer than males do. And I'm already 4 years older than you.
Oh my gosh. Let's not. This is very heavy now.
No, this is the time to talk about it.
No, it's not.
Live on the podcast. No. We need to. Yeah, we need to discuss this.
Oh, no, we don't. No. No.
Yeah, so I'm probably not going to be the one to write your obituary.
Okay, well.
Or your tombstone.
Well, what would yours say?
Partied hard.
Oh, no, that is not. That's not what it's going to say.
Something. I mean, you get to write mine, so what is mine going to say?
Oh, I mean, probably something along the lines of your mission statement. You know, that you always create spaces.
Creating spaces and fostering environments for people to fall in love with Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, you...
That seems pretty wordy for a tombstone.
But that would probably be what we'd say about you. That you created... You know? That you, I mean, you're doing that right now, so...
I suppose.
You know? No. Not you suppose. Okay, let's have a more lighthearted question. This is way too heavy.
I think this second one is more lighthearted. How would you use items from this room to survive on a desert island?
Ooh.
From this room.
From just this room. We're in our family room.
/ kitchen.
To survive. Oh, kitchen, yeah. Oh, we got some knives. We got some knives we could take. Cut open that coconut.
Wait, you just said we. You're on a desert island by yourself.
No, you're coming with me.
No.
I don't want to be there by myself. And if you come... Actually, I don't think you get to you're choose. In the room. So you should be able to come with me, for sure. You would be the ticket. You would be the reason why I would survive, for sure. Could we take this computer to fly ourselves off the island? To buy a ticket?
I don't think we would have service.
Okay. Golly. Okay, well, I mean, I feel like kitchen, there's a lot in a kitchen that you'd be able to use. Like, I really like my garlic peeler. That one would be a good one to have.
Maybe. So you think you're going to find wild garlic on a desert island?
I don't know. I'm just planning way ahead.
Wow.
No. I feel like you probably need some sort of rope, right?
Do you have rope in this room?
Nope. But no, we do. Actually, that closet that we put so much junk in, it's a good thing that we haven't cleaned it out because it comes in handy right now for the deserted island. There's some rope in there. I will be bringing that. There's clothespins in case I need to do some laundry.
I mean... How many changes of clothes are you going to have on this island?
That's so true.
I don't see any other clothes in this room.
Oh, that's true. Well, this blanket right here, I would take the blanket with me. You need something just to take off the chill a little bit. This pillow also. I'd be sleeping in a cozy little cabana.
I mean, if space isn't an issue, we could probably take everything in this room. Yeah. And just like recreate
that,
our living
that
room.
That filing cabinet has our... You know, all of our vital records. So it's got our passport, it's got birth certificate, shot records. That's also very invaluable.
Not on a desert island.
I, you know, I just, it, we just maybe are picturing different things.
Clearly. I'm picturing Lord of the Rings.
Oh, what?
Not, no, no, Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Rings.
Not Lord of the Rings.
That's like...
I'm picturing Lord of the Flies.
Saruman or whatever.
Sucks to your ass, Ma. Or I'm going to have the conch most of the time.
The shell?
Yeah, conch.
That's what they call it?
The conch.
Mm. I've never read Lord of the Flies.
Oh, wow. You're really missing out.
I know. You've talked about it multiple times, and I just play along.
That was like my middle school reading class.
I just
play
along.
Language arts.
I've never read it. Yeah. There's that big vase that I just actually put in this room. It's huge, and it's like for decoration, but you could for sure take a lot of fresh water into that and carry it back to your dwelling place. And that would be essential. Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, vessels are hard to find.
Yeah. I'm just saying. So, for sure. We got really everything we needed here. And books. We have so many books in that closet and on the shelf. We could take some books.
Maybe we would get lucky like they did on Lost and find like a Dharma Initiative bunker.
Yeah.
Maybe we could just live in there instead.
See, that's kind of what I'm picturing. I'm picturing Dharma Initiative, so then I'm picturing you're going to be building like a civilization with other people. So you would need your garlic peeler to host the big, you know, Thanksgiving type gatherings. Wait, wait,
wait. You just got stuck on an island and you're already thinking about hosting
people? Listen, you cannot kill
your
my
new
spirit,
civilization.
Okay? Don't take away my spirit of loving to host, okay? Maybe in my cabana, God will provide a way for me to host. There will be a big table.
I still am not sure that I'm coming.
No, that is... I can't handle between Epitaph and you leaving me on a deserted island. It's too heavy. You for sure need to say at least they're coming with me.
All right. I'll pray about it.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Join us next time for another episode. That's all for today.
To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.